Hello and welcome to the latest Chess Boxing podcast. I'm Tim Walker.
And I'm the GBF.
Good to see you, Gavin. Nice to be here in the legendary 12 Pins in Finsbury Park. Chose this pub out of respect to its origins as the home of Arsenal fans on the way to Highbury. A good stopping off point to have a drink before the match. And as a true Arsenal fan myself, I feel very much at home here.
Good, like an Arsenal watering hole.
It's an Arsenal watering hole, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we were talking earlier about Arsenal's season, and you and Zena have been having a bit of a competition on the fantasy football.
Zena, the technician,
that's coming to a head now, isn't it?
She's been ahead all season. I don't want to actually...
No, coming to a head.
Yeah, what did I say?
You said she's been ahead.
Oh, yeah, she has been ahead, though. She's been ahead almost since the first kick of the season. But through some miracle, I've somehow caught up with her, and now she's getting what they call squeaky bum time.
That's Alex Ferguson, isn't it?
That's what he said. Yeah.
Have you got ahead of her?
But there's still one more match to go, which is tonight's match, isn't it? So
she's got a game in hand.
Yeah, but it's gone from being like a 100-point deficit 2 weeks ago to neck and neck.
Okay.
So the one thing about Zena, the technician, you don't know is that if she loses at fantasy football, that's
she
it. You've lost her as a friend for at least a month, if not longer.
I can imagine she's like throwing like spreadsheets across the room.
Yeah, she takes it very seriously. She's got spreadsheets, she's got analysis.
She brings the technical attributes of not only her work life and her boxing. She analyses stats.
She does it. Yeah, she takes it seriously. Okay. I don't. And yet somehow.
Are you just saying that to wind her up, though? Because I think
no,
you do take it quite seriously.
I don't. I mean, I never even know who's playing half the time.
Oh, whatever. I wonder if there'll be a chess boxing fantasy league. Do you think that would work?
One day there could be.
Or maybe top trumps. We get top trumps first.
Chess boxing top trumps would be quite good, yes. Yeah. There would be some pretty good... For example, Dima would be a good one to have.
What, because he's quite successful, you mean?
He's successful.
World titles.
Yes, and he's good at boxing,
good at
and
magic.
He's good at chess.
Is there going to be a section for magic?
I suppose you could have personality as a section, yeah.
That's not magic, though, is it?
No, but they would score highly.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah.
Let's try and think of someone else, like Matt, for example. Matt, the crazy
one personality.
Yeah, his personality would scoring down the bottom. We can say that because
length of arm,
he's not here.
He's never here, is he?
Length of arm wouldn't be a category.
Craziness of arm.
Categories would be chess ability, boxing ability, entrance.
What, reach? What about reach?
No, that's not a category.
It's
important. Reach. Yeah. Okay, yeah, absolutely is. Yeah, I'm forgetting what I'm talking about. Reach, weight.
Yes, obviously, yeah.
Personality.
What about punch resistance?
Punch resistance and punching power.
That's basically all I've got is punch resistance. I don't really have any other attributes.
Punching power.
Punching power, yeah. Well, Lars would have good punching power, I think.
And footwork.
I think so.
Yeah.
Agility.
I think it comes under footwork.
Anyway, do you think we should talk about the last event?
Yes.
So, Tim, I caught up with Toby White, one of our protagonists in the last event. In fact, it was in the headline bout, the Brexit belt against
Arnott. That memorable bout, yes.
Yes, I caught up with him, well, via telephone. He was, I think he was on a stag do, so he had to step out of a pub to chat to me on the phone, so apologies.
Was
for the
he
quality.
Like wearing, you know, I don't know, women's underwear and a wig?
Well, he's a Liberal Democrat, isn't he? So.
Ooh.
But anyway, yeah. So apologies for the quality of the audio, but there's a short clip of what he had to say about the fight. So Toby, welcome to the podcast.
Hiya.
And how are you feeling? Are you fully recovered after your efforts?
The physical ordeal, yes, I'm fully recovered.
I can't imagine you've got any broken ribs or any bruises.
I actually hurt my left thumb.
Oh, really?
A little bit, not much. It got like a couple of days of bruising. So I think that final left hook, I might have hit him in my thumb a bit as well.
Okay.
That's about it.
Good. And I just thought we might just talk briefly about your sort of history as a chess boxer before we get onto the event.
Okay. So my first chess boxing fight was actually, I was supposed to fight Nick Cornish. And then he had to pull out last minute, so I ended up going against Tim. That was my first fight in a bit of an exhibition one where it wasn't serious, and and he ended up winning on chess. My first proper competitive one where I was trying to knock someone out was actually against Carl. Ouch. Yeah, at Chelsea.
I remember your first exhibition fight now, because that was the time that Zinho referred to him as the blue hippo, because he wore like a really horrendous like
whatever he could find. Yeah,
because I think he was a bit embarrassed because he was a little bit out of shape and there's no way to get in the ring, so he decided to really just keep his vest on the entire time.
Yeah,
and he tried to make light of it by calling himself a hippo. And the crowd just didn't get it at all. It just went down like a little bit. It was absolutely brilliant.
It was good. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed it.
Didn't Tim end up with two queens in that game?
Yes, I believe so. We kind of played quite quick. I didn't want to try and put him through a third round of boxing. So I was definitely playing hurry-up chess. We kind of played to his advantage, I think.
So are you saying that you were trying to, I don't know, save Tim's blushes by not putting another round of boxing.
Basically, yeah. Some people were like, oh, you could have gone through the round of boxing just by playing slow. And I was like, I don't think he could have got through another one. Because he hadn't, like, it's horrible to try and box having not trained. It's kind of like a foolish thing to do.
Okay, so that was your first fight. And then you fought Carl Ouch, and he's one of the, well, if not the best chess boxer I think we have on the circuit at the moment.
He did taunt me at one point by doing push-ups while I was thinking about moves.
Oh, yeah, I remember that now. Yeah, I didn't really think that was appropriate. I thought that.
Oh, it was fine. Yeah, we both kind of went in there to entertain. You know, he's happy. He understands, like, you fight because you want to fight. That's why you get in there. And we do chess boxing, people are in pain. I was fine with it. He didn't tell me I was going to do it. I just kind of laughed. I was like, I should have, the moment we started doing it, made a move and hit the clock. He used it so much time while I was doing push-ups. That's what I should have done.
It's interesting that you should say that, because I remember that quite well. And something else I was going to talk to you about, sort of skipping forward a little bit to the event, is that I seem to remember when you were playing chess with Jonathan, that Jonathan did a little kind of celebratory kind of dance or wiggle. You watched it back?
I remember. I noticed it at the time. And the weird thing is, they're playing like the Star Wars theme tune in headphones at the time, really loudly. I was like, who dances to Star Wars thinking? Like, especially like that. It was, I don't know if he was trying to distract me, to maybe make a mistake.
Okay.
kind of just maybe want to hit him more, to be honest.
Well, I know. I mean, I think it's a very dangerous thing to, I mean, Carl is very experienced, and I don't think that showboating really, I mean, it was great entertainment, but
yeah.
I'm not sure it shone the best light on him, but he's
I know, but
he got experience, whereas Jonathan was his first chess book
yeah.
event, and I think, you know, you want to be...
Taunting me, was he?
Yeah. considering what happened in the following round.
I think it was just trying to distract me, trying to do anything to make me do something silly.
So you think it was psychological, you think?
Yeah, I'd hope. If I was in his situation, I would have done that. Something similar, just try and see if I just didn't pay attention.
Okay. And how did the preparation go for the fight? Because I don't. How long did you have to prepare for the Arnold fight?
I had about 9 weeks notice, and I wasn't exactly in great shape. I hadn't played chess for about 2 years. So, since I moved out of London, it's like just hadn't really had the opportunity.
I mean, I thought you were in very good shape. I thought you were the best shape I've seen you in, to be honest.
Oh, by the fight, I was in incredible shape. I mean, I was basically told that I was fighting someone who's got professional boxing training, and that kind of makes you a bit nervous if you've ever been in the ring before. Those who can fight against those who can't fight is kind of one-sided.
So you had the fear, basically. You were really...
Yeah. You got to take boxing seriously. To not do it would be foolish. It'd be silly.
Yeah. So you took it very seriously, and by the time you got in the ring, you were looking good, and you obviously felt well prepared.
I felt very well. I mean, I was as prepared as I could have been. I don't think I could have been more prepared in the time I had from where I was. I felt more confident in both boxing and chess than I expected to.
Okay.
At the time.
And how did you feel that directly on the day of the fight, waiting, because I know you actually end up playing chess against Jonathan, didn't you? Just when we were setting up, we all arrived about 3 o'clock, didn't we?
So my ability to practice chess was limited to the fact that I didn't really have anyone willing to play me who, you know, was willing to, I don't know, put up a good fight, should say. There were, I don't know many chess players. So I relied on basically training by just playing on my phone against other people or against my phone itself. So I signed up for chess.com and just paid for the most expensive membership so I could do as many puzzles as possible, just to try and get my brain thinking again about combinations and patterns and such like that. So when I climbed into the ring, it was basically just to get used to looking at a chessboard again, because I hadn't actually looked at one in a while. And just because it's quite a large one as well. I remember that last time going sitting in the chess boxing ring and just being surprised at how large a chess set is. So you have to look at a slightly larger area. So it's quite easy to miss pieces. And if you're not concentrating, your perspective is very different to if it's on the phone screen.
Yeah, it sounds ridiculous, but actually I find it a very, very different game, and it's much harder to pick up patterns in the board when you're using pieces, I find, compared to the computer screen. But what I was talking about really was how did it come about? Because you obviously played early, and you were in the ring looking at the chessboard.
And yeah, he just went okay and got in with me, kind of with me, and had a chat.
Okay,
Discussed a few things. I can't remember what. I think he opened, and then I just kind of counted successfully as well. I was surprised. I've actually done the right response. Made an amazing thing for it. So, and I was like, okay, I'll stop here. But I did the same thing with Carl actually before I fought him, which is probably was a mistake. But
I'm not sure it's something I would do, certainly. But how did he make you feel? Meeting Jonathan in the flesh and seeing him and chatting to him and his coach as well. Did that help to ease the nerves or not really? Or you just kind of it's good to have him.
I think I knew that my game plan was always going to be play a slow game in the chess and then focus on the box attacking the boxing basically, and then meeting him, seeing him in the flesh, you kind of knew that would be the right tactic. Because it didn't seem like he'd put too much effort into the boxing training. Nothing compared to what I'd been sacrificing to get in the ring. So I knew that would be kind of one-sided. Okay. I just knew I had to go through the move, go through the motions, basically. But he's a perfectly nice guy. He was chatty and stuff. I just think he didn't prepare properly.
I mean, I think it's hard to argue that he did prepare well, certainly in the boxing. Having put in a lot of work, how did that make you feel? I mean, I think it's a brave thing to get into boxing ring under any circumstance, but were you, how did you feel once you realised, what was happening?
So, I've always said when it comes to sport, I'm never that worried about winning as long as my opponent deserves his win, so he basically turned up having not trained. I was like, well, he doesn't really deserve to win. If he won this, it wouldn't really be chess boxing, it would just be chess. And if he wanted to win a game of chess, he could have just stayed at home and done that. So I kind of felt like I had to therefore just let what happened happen. So I felt kind of determined in that basically I just had to do what I had to do. So I was very focused and, it kind of focuses the mind, if you say. Makes you very determined, single-minded.
And that's all we've got time for in this podcast, but catch the second half of the interview in the next podcast.
Well, that was fascinating. Interesting to hear what Toby had to say there.
I think Toby, from what I can gather, is desperate to come back because I don't think he feels that he got a full run out in terms of certainly the boxing side, so it'd be good to see him back in the ring sometime soon. What do you think?
Well, one thing that surprised me, and I'm sure, I hope Toby doesn't take this the wrong way, but was Toby in peak condition or what for that fight? I fought Toby in the past when he'd been in the gym training consistently.
Yeah, that was the Blue Hippo fight, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right, Blue Hippo fight, when I had to jump in at the last minute because his opponent dropped out.
Mm.
And I wore some rather unfetching blue, shiny blue shorts and top.
I don't know where you got them from.
I don't know. There was nothing else available. Was I going to go out there nude?
Could you not have borrowed something?
No. I did. I borrowed them.
We need to trace the person who owns those.
Well, anyway.
Because they need serious help.
The point is that Blue Hippo fight...
Yeah,
that went down in history. I fought Toby, and Toby wasn't in anything like the condition he was in to fight.
Well, in the Chelsea event as well, he wasn't in the same shape.
I know.
And I was surprised.
I felt really bad for Jonathan, because I thought after 2 years not being in the gym, Toby would obviously come out looking less fit and less strong than he did. So although he wasn't in a boxing gym, he must have been in some sort of a gym, because he came out looking like
a decathlete,
didn't he? Yeah.
Well, he didn't have that long. He had what, like a couple of months, but maybe less.
He had 6 weeks.
He must have been in pretty trim shape, because Toby A to Toby B in 6 weeks, do you?
No, that was Toby, Mark 2.7, wasn't it? Unbelievable. I have to say that I'm glad that he wasn't in that shape when I fought him, because even though I'm experienced and have knocked around the boxing ring a few occasions, I would have had some serious thoughts about going against him without a lot of preparation.
It's a shame, really, because he did look in shape, but it was very hard to judge if he had done a lot of work in terms of technical training, because
he looked okay to me. He looked okay to me.
He looked okay, but it's hard to judge, I think, on that performance.
Maybe, yeah, maybe I really should. Maybe Toby's next match should be a rematch against me.
I think Lars would be a good fight.
But he's already done. Oh no, Lars versus interesting idea.
But I'm not against the idea, but you have other commitments on the evening often, don't you? So.
Yeah. I do want to get back in the ring, though. I do feel like it would be...
I don't think you got it, mate. I think you should just hang up the gloves.
Hang up my gloves?
Yeah, call it a day. Yeah.
See, now you're just winding me up. You're winding me up. Okay.
I mean, a few years ago, maybe, but now... I don't think you could get back into shape.
I'm not going to rise to this, mate. I'm not going to bite.
Okay. Something that's not related to Chess Boxing Podcast or Chess Boxing at all, but it's something I think you'd really like. And
yes.
It's a programme I watched on the BBC this week.
I know it.
Horizon.
Yes.
Yeah, and?
It was the one where they... Oh, I saw it. But not about sleeping.
So basically it's about radio transmissions from...
Yeah, from
stars.
Another planet. Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, so they're finding all these exoplanets. And there's a couple of methods.
They were
looking
for the signal. And it was supposed to be broadcast on the bandwidth of hydrogen or something. Which obviously is what aliens would do.
so basically, what they do, there's several ways of determining if there's an exoplanet around a star. So one of them is if the exoplanet crosses the face of the star, and it dims, like the star dims because it's...
Yeah, they can measure to a very high degree of accuracy.
There's other ways
how much
of doing
light
it.
Is
and then there's
from
like
the,
gravitational wobbles of the star and things like this. But that's one of them, and they found this star where the dimming of the light is completely different to every single other star that they've found exoplanets on. So usually there's like
Tammy star or something like that.
A U-shaped like dip,
yes.
And it's over a certain time period, and it's a dip of a certain like intensity. And this one star is completely different,
yes.
and they don't know why. And one of the ideas is that there is a Dyson sphere.
They've built a gigantic vacuum cleaner of a planet.
No, it's actually Freeman Dyson. I don't know if he's a relation of James Dyson, but James Dyson, actually, I met him because he went to my school, and he's a bit older than me, but when I got an award for industry at my school, and he presented me with this award. But as far as I can tell, an award for industry is something that you get given if you don't deserve any award at all. It's kind of like if everyone gets
it's like
award,
an award for trying.
Exactly, yeah.
They
basically got an award
You've
for
got
trying.
That. Okay, good.
I think that reflects my chess boxing career quite well. So
far. No, come on, Gavin.
I mean, I've,
anyway, let's get back to extraterrestrial
right,
stuff.
Right, so a Dyson sphere is basically there are three levels of civilization. So civilization one is basically intelligent life on a planet.
Yes.
Civilization two, a class two, is basically when you're able to harness the power of an entire star, one sun. Civilization class three is when you're able to harness the power of an entire galaxy.
What are we?
So we're one. So we're.
So how do we know that two and three exist?
We don't know they exist. It's just classification.
Okay.
So classification two is basically where you probably have to use all the material in a galaxy to create a Dyson sphere, which is basically you get a load of solar panels that are massive, and you start stringing together, and you create a sphere around the entire sun. You capture all of the energy produced by that sun.
Yes.
To do whatever you want to do with it.
Well, I heard an interesting theory that you use it to destroy another planet, like the Death Star.
What do you mean? Why would you do that?
Well,
that's what you would do. It's funny, interesting that your mind would jump to an application this power.
You say that, but it's not the reason. The reason is because if you look at the planet Mars, right?
So yeah, now, okay. Let's say I'm looking at the planet Mars.
That shows
that
signs of having been destroyed by a death ray.
No, it doesn't.
Yes, it does.
No, it has striations and things that patterns on the surface. But it had an atmosphere which was stripped away.
By what?
Billions of
a
years
death
ago.
Ray. From a
no,
Dyson
because
sphere.
It got so hot.
That's what a death ray does.
I'm not sure about this, Tim.
Well, this is interesting because if you look at it, there's the planet Mars has got a valley in it which is like really massively long.
No, there were canals, weren't there? Galileo mistook
it for
canals.
Don't get mixed on with the canals. this one canal is like the Grand Canyon times 10. And
yeah.
It's super deep.
It's because there was fluid on Mars at one point, and then it got burnt off.
That Grand Canyon was caused by this death ray that came cutting along the surface. And what would happen if...
So why wasn't it straight? Why does it look like it was eroded?
Well,
like,
have you ever tried to point
it's like
death
when
ray?
Came, you know, that doctor
yeah, exactly.
Game,
if you
or
get
that wire.
Exactly. If you try to use a...
So you're saying this death ray
was...
A
laser pointer.
This,
you can't just put it on the spot and draw a straight line. It goes
so,
a bit
so
wobbly.
So you're saying this death ray was aimed by someone's hand?
Well, I don't know.
That sounds unlikely.
Even if it's aimed by a computer, it's going across an awful long way of space. It's going across light years of space, so a little bit of wobble is acceptable.
Right.
And the fact is...
I think you missed the point. We're not careful.
I think that's the point of it. Yeah, Mars, probably there was people on Mars like us doing chess boxing podcasts, chatting away, millennia ago. Their planet was getting to a level which other civilizations
thought... And they were like, don't like this.
Don't like look at what's going on there. Actually, there's chess boxing there, so let's not do it. Maybe
so you,
Mars
well, you're,
didn't
so
have
you're
chess
saying,
boxing.
You're saying that chess boxing is the height of civilization?
Probably, yes.
Or is the bar above which you're going to get
maybe
the death
Maybe Martians
rate?
Didn't have chess boxing, and that's what doomed them. Maybe because we are doing chess boxing on planet
We've
Earth...
saved the planet.
We may save the planet from this death rate. Yeah.
I think
but
it's
a
much,
real one,
I, do you know
not
what, I
a made-up one.
I think it's much more like to be a cloud of dust.
Especially not with a Dyson around, which isn't...
Yes,
yeah. It'll be gone in no time.
Nominative determinism gone mad.
Exactly. So I think it's appropriate to spend a minute or two talking about the reason why we had to cancel the June event at York Hall, which is, after, I don't know, nearly 10 years of chess boxing, this is the first time we've ever cancelled an event. And the reason for it was simply due to the local authorities' licensing bylaw, which means essentially that drinking in the venue is banned.
Well, it's drinking in view of the ring, isn't it?
Yeah, but to all intents and purposes, that means it bans drinking on the night because you can't enjoy the night and enjoy a drink. So you have to choose between watching chess boxing or having a drink. And if you're just going to go to have a drink, why come to the chess boxing? You're coming to the chess boxing, you're not allowed to have a drink. It feels a little bit, it's impecunious or, well, I don't know, it doesn't feel right. It also feels like an infringement on your rights.
I'd say anecdotally.
As a human being.
Anecdotally, because this has been in place for a couple of events, and almost exclusively, the only thing, or one of the things that, other than how great the event was, that people would come and say the only problem is, we're long-term chess boxing fans, we've been coming for a lot of years, and not be able to drink in front of the ring has really put a dent in, you know, our enjoyment.
Yeah.
So well, I think it was affecting people.
It put a dent in my enjoyment. We didn't know about it in December. It was sprung upon us with 24 hours notice. So there was nothing we could have done about it on December 16th. And we were already so committed to the April event, even at that point, that it would have been too late to cancel that event. Also, with the Brexit belt and with the TV show, you know, already booked in, it would have been impossible to cancel it. But, you know, I think our audience really voted with their feet. It was clear from the crowd size, although it was a fantastic event, you know, so few people were there to enjoy it compared to what we normally get.
Well, I actually thought it was almost a new crowd. I think a lot of the regulars stayed away because of that, but we actually got a whole new crowd, and I think it's a testimony to how popular the event was that actually I didn't recognise a lot of the people there. And, you know, I think you get to know certain people, especially if you work on the door like I do. You see the same groups coming in over and over again. And the crowd on April 1st was a totally new crowd.
It was different, a lot of different people. A lot of people were there to support Toby, of course, and Jonathan. But yeah, there was a lot of new people there. And a lot of those new people didn't find it a problem because they weren't used to anything else.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe we could at some point, you know, start to build a new audience of
non-drinkers
or people who are not bothered by that. And there's nothing wrong with that. June is festival season, it's holiday season, and it's traditionally a more quiet event when, you know, the numbers of people in the rooms are down already. So that's the reason why we took the difficult decision, and I guess I'm talking to you, the listener, right now. That's the reason why we took that difficult decision to cancel the event, for which, you know, we feel, you know, what can we say? We're sorry about it. We didn't want it to happen. But we're back, and we're looking at some really exciting new venues for the autumn. In particular, one with a really great experience of like the full 360, a mezzanine level. They'll be drinking right there. You can take your drinks in the ring, you know, just like the old days when
you'd be drinking in the ring, like whilst you're chess boxing.
In the old days of chess boxing, we used to get people up into the ring at the end of the night, have a party, take your drinks up. Yeah, party in the ring. Do all of that again. You know, let's get back to basics.
Saying earlier, though, there were a lot of people in the show who were supporting Jonathan, but from when he came in the ring, there's a lot of booing.
Yes, there was.
I mean, was there that bigger crowd from
UK? No, there was no UK people in the audience at all. No one was there.
Okay, they were
He's
just
from Sheffield.
Friends and family.
Friends and family. You know, I had kind of got slightly mixed up thinking it was an MEP, getting mixed up with being an MP. So I thought a lot of people from Westminster would come, but actually he doesn't have any support in Westminster. UKIP doesn't have any. He's got maybe one.
Do you think anyone from Brussels came?
One, exactly. It's a long way from Brussels. So that even then,
it's chess boxing. It's worth it, surely.
Of course, it's worth it. We've had people travel further than that. We've had people coming from Mexico to watch the chess boxing match before now.
Okay.
So I think that's the furthest anyone's ever travelled to a London chess boxing show. But that.
How did they hear about it? Why were they like?
They heard about it online.
Really?
And that was their reason for coming to London.
And they just went, bang, I would just
I'm going to go and see that. Yeah, came to the Scala.
Well, we need to contact them because I've been looking at the stats for the podcast and there's no one from Mexico. And I think if they're committed to come all the way over here, they definitely want to listen to the podcast.
Okay, well, look, great to see you again, Gavin, and to pull this rather, you know, extemporary. Is that a word? Podcast out of the hat. We've done it on the fly. We've done it in the legendary 12 Pins in Finsbury Park, and it's been fun.
Good
to see you, Gavin.
And good to see you too.
As I say, coming up, it's going to be September, October, December. The dates we're looking at now for next shows. It's going to be a very busy autumn and winter. More shows coming up. Chess boxing is on television. There's going to be more chess boxing on television. So tune in Channel 91, Channel 468 on Sky, Channel 91 Freeview. It's goodbye from me to Mulga.
And it's goodbye from me, the GBF.
And we'll see you soon.
See you soon.